All right. Well, welcome to the show, Zach Harlow, a.k.a. the Sales Ninja. He's crazy passionate about his Ninja Nation tribe of insurance entrepreneurs that are bent on changing the game of B2B insurance sales. Simplify the game. Become crazy profitable and serve your clients better than ever. Even more than that, his beautiful bride, Laurel, and their three-year-old twins, Walker and Kaisley. Is that how you say her name? Their name?
Walker Kasley, and Kaisley? Yep.
Kasley. Okay, Kasley, I don't want to mess it up. He's learned how to be a loving husband, crazy active daddy, and serve his tribe all at the same time. Welcome, Zach. I'm so excited to talk about this.
Oh my gosh, Jody, thank you so much for having me on. It's an absolute pleasure to get to hang out with you and your tribe today.
Nice. So cool. And I love how you were able to incorporate that this is your business and your family. All these things are important to you. So tell me a little bit more about your business. Just an overview of your business.
Yeah. So, my gosh, I have been in the world of entrepreneurism, I guess, my entire life. I have never had a W-2 job of any kind. So entrepreneurism, it's all I've ever known. I've only ever worked for myself. And then over the years, in the last specifically 15 years, I have been building very large sales teams in the insurance marketplace. If you're familiar with carriers like Aflac, that is one of the largest carriers that I have been with for many, many, many years. And just recently, after 15 years with them, fully retired from being contracted with Aflac, and now we are in the process of continuing to build out independent insurance operations. And now I get to do sales consulting and coaching for independent insurance entrepreneurs that own and run their own book of business and are looking for ways to have a mentor guide them and just become more profitable than ever before. And my mantra is, I believe that so much of the insurance sales process has become so overcomplicated. I could probably say that about most businesses. But we teach an extremely simple marketing strategy and the way that we build our clientele. And I just want to simplify the game for people and help them become more profitable. It's that simple.
That's awesome. And you know, this really resonates with me because my dad was an insurance agent all my life. He still is. He's 70. No kidding. And he still has his insurance office. My sister is taking it over. And so business is like in my veins, or insurance is like in my veins, you know, it's our family legacy in a way.
So, fantastic.
That's really fascinating. I guess then if you've always been an entrepreneur, you know, my question is, why have you been, you know, why did you choose the path of an entrepreneurship? And also, why have you chosen to stay an entrepreneur, I guess, since you've always been? You know, I think that sometimes when people start or they get on this path of entrepreneurship, it gets scary. And we're always told that a secure job, quote unquote, secure job is the path to success, but that's not the route you ever wanted to take. Why is that?
Boy, that is a big question. So let me see if I can break that down a little bit without going into, you know, boring your listeners too much. But I think it really started it did start when I was a kid. When I was really young, and I watched, I guess I've always been quite observant, and I just watched not just my parents, but I watched our my parents' circle, their circle of friends, and everybody had jobs and they went to their work and they did their work. And for whatever reason, we did not grow up with let's just call it, forget disposable income. We grew up, not poor. Like I didn't grow up in poor necessarily, but I absolutely grew up. I can remember difficult days with mom and dad and them not having the money to pay all the bills, and certainly not do any of the crazy fun adventuresome type of things. So, you know, I looked at that model and I was like, I'm not interested in that. And then I watched, I just watched how hard my dad worked and how much he gave so much time. Like he's probably the hardest working person I know, especially when I was growing up. And I was like, no way, man, if I'm going to work that hard, I'm going to figure out how to work that hard for me so that I can build something. And I didn't even know what to build, but I suppose the entrepreneurism bug bit me hard when I was about 14 or 15 years old. didn't have the money to do things that teenagers want to do, didn't have the money to go to the movies. And I mean, mom and dad just didn't have it. It flat out wasn't going to happen. So if it was going to happen, Zach better figure out a way to make some dadgum money. So it's pretty simple. I found a lawnmower sitting in the garage and I started walking up and down the street on our neighborhood. And I was like, hey, you know, for 10 bucks or 15 bucks or whatever it was all those years ago, can I mow your yard? I need to make some money. I need to raise some cash. And that, man, that bit me hard. The bug bit hard because A, none of my friends, if they didn't have mom and dad's checkbook, they didn't have any money. And here I was, by the time I turned 15 years old, and then 16 years old, and I had actual money. Like I had a bank account, and I can remember at, I think I was 16 years old. I remember the very first time that I kept depositing these little $10 here and $15 there. And I remember a moment in life when all of a sudden I got my deposit slip back from the credit union, and all of a sudden it had a comma in it. And I was like, I'm rich. Like I thought I might as well have been a millionaire. I was like, here I am. I actually have a comma in my bank. I didn't even know you could get a comma. Like that was so, so amazing. And if that wasn't enough to just sink in the veins of entrepreneurship and working for yourself and building, then, that was the moment I think that just absolutely solidified it for me. Now, that being said, you said something about challenges and disappointments and setbacks and problems.
We'll get to that in the next.
Oh, yeah. Anybody listening to this podcast that's ever tried to build or grow or do anything in the world of entrepreneurism, we've gotten our butts kicked, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an awesome story. I love that. It's like, it reminded me a lot of like rich dad, poor dad type of a story where it's like, you know, we have the poor mentality is, you know, always trade your time for money. And then, but like the rich mentality is, that you make your money work for you. So you know, your time is like exponential when it comes to making money. You know, it's there's just a different mentality, I think. And I think it's fascinating that you talked about growing up and how your adverse circumstances inspired you to be an entrepreneur. And that's something that, you know, I talk about a lot is how, you know, we are always told growing up, like there's one traditional way to quote unquote success. And I love that you never accepted that. Like you were just like, no, that's not, I don't want to have to trade my time for money forever and have to work that hard to only make, you know, not enough to survive on. So,
oh, sure. Jody, I wish I could tell you that I was that smart and that strategic all those years ago. That just wasn't, it really, I mean, if I'm being totally honest and transparent, it really boiled down to, I'd like to go to the movies with my friends. Well, I ain't got no money. Well, I guess I'm going to have to go find a way to get money. I mean, I think it was an evolution that one thing led to the other, led to the other. I've only actually been on two what would have been a W-2 type of position where I got a paycheck. I've only been on two job interviews in my life. And one of them, when I was maybe about 17 or 18 years old, I had now built my little lawn and landscape business. It was doing quite well. I mean, at 18 years old, I was making pretty decent money as a kid. And the only problem with lawn and landscape in West Texas is this thing called winter. And winter comes along, and when winter comes along, grass stops growing. And when grass stops growing, people stop paying me to cut it. I was like, man, this sucks. I got to figure out a way to make money in the winter. So I thought, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go interview. I'm going to go get a job. And I'm going to get a job throughout the winter so I can at least still have some money coming in. And I remember, man, this has been, golly, this, I haven't told this story in forever. This is probably 22, 23, 24 years ago. I remember sitting on Sauncey Road in Amarillo, Texas at an Officemax of all places. I had my dress slacks on. I'm a lawn and landscape kid in West Texas. I don't own dress slacks, but I went and got a pair for this interview at Officemax. And I'm interviewing with the, what do you call them? The manager or whatever that hires for these little retail jobs?
HR, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. And we go through the whole interview process, and then he tells me how much I would be getting paid. And I was like, what? And I mean, this is 20 years ago. I don't remember. It was like, let's say it was like $7 an hour or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just remember looking at it going, are you kidding? That's what a job is? And I remember ending the interview very quickly, thanking him for his time and walking out. And I decided, heck no. And then that born, actually over the next many years, I started a Christmas light design and installation service that over the years ended up in like 8 weeks of Christmas, we ended up doing more revenue in that than we did in the lawn and landscape business. It's crazy.
Wow. That is such a cool story. I love that. I love that because you had that entrepreneurial experience. You know, I think sometimes people go into those kind of interviews going, please hire me, please, please hire me. You know, like they just don't feel like they have any other option. And so this is like their last hope. But you were like, wait, I'm in control of this. No, thank you. You know, that's so cool that you had that mindset because you had that experience. That's awesome. So
yeah, thanks. That's way cool. It's been a lot of fun.
So now that you've had these businesses, you're growing up and you start a family, why has your family been an integral part of being a business owner?
So Jody, we cut out just a little bit right there. Well, can you repeat the question?
Okay. So now that you've had these businesses, you have this entrepreneurial mindset and, you know, and you grew up, you have a family now, right? Like how has an entrepreneur, you know, why has your family been an integral part of that and what you are trying to establish with your family as a business owner?
Jody, love, 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 love that question. And it goes back to an answer I've kind of already given. I'm going to go back to my childhood again. I'm going to go back to while I grew up in a family that did not have money, what we did not lack was love. I mean, I grew up in a very loving home, wonderful, wonderful Christian parents, showed me the value of hard work, showed me the value of being a loving mother and father. Not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it was a great home. However, the challenge was, I can remember throughout my entire childhood, my dad was at work way more often than he was able to be present in like our lives at sports or gymnastics or the school play or, you know, all the other stereotypical things that kids do, right? And my dad wasn't able to be at a lot of those things because he was always working, trying to make enough money to pay the bills, to provide for the family, yada, yada, yada. And I just watched this vicious circle. And I made this, like, I remember, golly, this was probably somewhere about the time that I started getting serious and dating and relationships and whatnot started to matter, you know, through in my college years, probably. And I just made this determination that, like, no matter what, I don't care. I don't know what my life's going to look like. I don't know what I'm ultimately going to do. I'm certainly not going to be in lawn and landscape forever, but I didn't know what I was going to do next. I just made that determination that I will not sacrifice money for family. But I also was unwilling to be broke. So it was like this really, it was almost like the mental battle for a little while of how am I going to make sure that we're not broke? I don't like growing up broke and I don't want my kids or anything having to grow up broke, but I also want to be present. So how in the world can we have an income that is sustainable, but also have a lifestyle where I get to be an active dad and husband and all the things, all mm-hmm. of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're saying that entrepreneurship and your businesses have allowed you to have that balance and prioritize your family because of being able to manage your own time.
You know what? I'm glad that you put it that way because I don't know that that's the case. I actually have mm-hmm. seen now that especially today and for the last several years, I've been coaching a lot of entrepreneurs and I work with a lot of these independent business owners in the insurance space. And I watch more of them sacrificing family for the business. So it's not, entrepreneurship does not automatically mean money and time. In fact, you've heard it probably said, right? There's this funny little saying in the world of entrepreneurism that an entrepreneur is the person who works 80 hours a week to avoid working 40.
Right.
I hate that saying. I despise it. Now, are there times in our business that as entrepreneurs, we have to grind it out and we have to hustle and we've got to really, really put the time in the, yeah, of course there are times. But this is one of the reasons why, and I'm not going to attack Gary Vee, but it's one of the reasons I am not a Gary Vee follower. I do not like the grind, hustle, grind, hustle, grind, hustle mentality. I think that can do more damage to young entrepreneurs not understanding that there is a season to grind and hustle, but you better be building your business. And it all starts with mindset. I made the mental decision that my business would equip me for my lifestyle. I cannot have a mental decision that I'm going to have a business so that hopefully I get to have a lifestyle. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes, very much. I love that.
So bottom line point is, I mean, I think, you know, I encourage my tribe to do this all the time. I would encourage your tribe. They've got to make the mental decision first. I choose to be an entrepreneur. So, and then fill in the blank, right? I'm going to be the best stinking father I can be. I'm going to be the best husband I can be. I'm going to be the best lover that I can be. I'm going to be the best human being that I can be. Oh, by the way, I happen to be an entrepreneur.
Wow.
Not I'm an entrepreneur so I can do all those things.
Yeah. I love that. That's really the essence of what, like, my journey. That's my message. Thank you for summarizing that so well. So clear. I'm like, I have nothing to add. Thank you. No, that, right. That's
interview
that's,
over. We'll see you later.
Okay. Have a good night. Right now. Well, I love that because it's so true. It's so true. I think that, you know, when there's that quote, right, that no other success will compensate for failure within the home, right? That it's like we have to put our families first, and doing the business, grow, you know, being successful shouldn't be canceling out those priorities. It should be that it's allowing you to have those priorities and have that
Amen.
Freedom.
Amen. That's it. Yeah. That's it. That's all it boils down to.
Cool. Well, the last question that I want to ask in this section of the interview then is, you know, how would you describe the legacy that you're trying to build with your family as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, the legacy for my family.
For your family. Yeah. So what is your family legacy? What is the legacy that, you know, when you're grown up, your kids are grown up, what do they look back and want to remember about dad?
Man, I love that. Family legacy. I tell you, one thing my dad instilled in me, and I think he got it from his dad, my Papa Harlow, who has went home to be with Jesus many, many, many years ago. But I have this old placard. It's about that big. It's, I don't know, 3 inches by 5 inches or something. I said that big, like your people on podcasts would know what I'm doing.
If you used to come watch the video, it's fine.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know, about the size of a postcard. And what it says is, it says Harlow engraved at the top, H-A-R-L-O-W, which is our family last name. And it basically says, you know, grandpa, my papa gave it to my dad, who ended up giving it to me. And it basically just says, hey, I don't have much to give you. All I really have to give you is our last name. Protect it, cherish it, and make it that what you will.
Hmm.
And you know, that has always really, really stuck with me, that my papa and my dad, they didn't have money per se. They didn't have political influence. They didn't have a last name that when you saw it, you're like, oh my gosh, the Rockefellers, they must be so important, right? It was just, we were just a West Texas country family. But that last name means something to me. And as I'm building our business, and we are in the process of quite literally changing our family tree from a financial aspect, and my kids are growing up very different financially than I ever did. And really for us, you know, my wife and I talk about this all the time. We talked about it before we had kids, is the intentionality at which we are approaching how we raise our kids and making sure that they understand, yes, we are blessed. We have built a really great business that has done very well financially because we serve our clients incredibly well, all on the foundational principle, though, that at the end of the day, while the sales ninja may be the brand, Harlow is the last name. Wow. And so the legacy that I want to leave for my kids is when they look back, they're like, man, dad is not only dad, Zach is not only did he give us a great childhood. Not only did we have his last name, and not only did we grow up in a blessed household and got to give back and serve and enjoy some finer things in life. But man, I want them to have that legacy of giving back and understanding that I want them to understand the actual principle that money follows value. And that when you pour into other people, and when you provide value into the marketplace, and when you are building things that the market rewards, money follows that. It is a result of something positive given, not something to be hoarded and not something to be greedy. I mean, at the end of the day, I want my kids to fully understand that money amplifies a person's heart. money. That's all. That's it. Yeah. It takes people who are incredibly selfish and incredibly greedy. And all of a sudden, if they end up with a lot of money, all they are is an incredibly greedy, incredibly selfish person who has a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But the same is also true that you can take somebody who has absolutely no money, but they have the biggest heart in the world and they care and they love and they give sacrificially, right? And all of a sudden they come into money. And more often than not, especially if they have to earn that money, not win that money, but when they have to earn it, they tend to amplify. They tend to become even bigger givers and even bigger investors and even like, does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, definitely.
That's what I want for my kids.
You want them to grow up believing that they have an impact to make, not just that they deserve it or that they're going to become greedy jerks.
Yeah. 110%, Jody. That's it.
That's awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, Zach. That concludes the first portion of our interview, but tell us where we can find you and connect with more of what you're doing. Your tribe.
Yeah. The best way to connect with me, if you're interested in sales training and sales coaching and the kind of stuff that I do in the world of sales and entrepreneurism, probably just connect with me on Facebook. You can go to literally my public page is The Sales Ninja One. If you just type in The Sales Ninja One, it'll pull me right up. I'm there, public page. And then we've got, you know, some groups and stuff that we do beyond that. But the best way, Sales Ninja One on Facebook.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Zach. That was awesome.
Thank you, Jody.
Cool. So I'll roll into the second portion of the interview here. Thanks for sticking around. This part, I wanted to talk a little bit more about your entrepreneurial journey. And so what would you say was your biggest obstacle when you were starting a business and or growing your business? I get it. Just one, right?
Oh, yeah, that's tough. Just one? Good gosh. Okay. Biggest obstacle in starting the business originally, I guess I've been in the world of entrepreneurism so long and I have faced so many demons in terms of challenges and problems and failure, like all of them. I think every mistake that could be made, I've made at least most of them twice, but I'll go back to like the foundational, I guess my origin story almost of when I got started. And I remember, you know, in the last episode, we talked a little bit about when I opened up the garage door, there sat the lawnmower and I was like, all right, I got to make some money. If I want to go to the movies, I'm going to grab this lawnmower and go start mowing lawns. Well, that was really, really cute, Zach, when you're 14, 15, maybe even 16 years old. But then when I turned 17 and then mom and dad started telling me, hey, are you still, can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah.
It popped up on my screen and said, we lost our internet.
Oh, no, I can still hear you. You good?
Where can I pick back up from that y'all can edit
it? Okay. That it was cute. And when you were 17 and your mom and dad were going.
Okay. So, you know, now I'm like getting 16, 17, 18 years old and mom and dad are starting to look at me and they're like, hey, so when are you going to get a real job? And I was like, well, I'm going to keep doing this because I'm out earning every single one of my friends that has a real job. And then I turn 18 years old and I graduate high school. Now it's time to start thinking about college. Now I went to college. My parents did not have the money for me to go to college. I qualified for a couple of grants and I qualified for some scholarships, but I still had a pretty good sized nut that I had to pay for college. And see, here's another thing. This is like a total side note. I don't know if you're going to keep this in or not, but again, I watched mom and dad and I watched what debt did to them. And I watched how they became a slave to debt throughout my entire life. And I watched debt rob them, in my opinion, of their ability to live the best life in the best moment at the here and now. And so I made a promise to myself at 18 years old, I would not go into debt. I refused. So that meant I had to figure out a way to pay for college in cash. That was a little bit of an obstacle, but I am really, really excited to tell you that I ended up doing it, but I did it by continuing to stay true to building out that lawn and landscape thing. It's why I went to that interview and just laugh when they told me it's like $7 an hour. I'm like, give me a break. Have a great day. We started that other, you know, Christmas light design and consulting business and then off to the races. I ended up being able to pay cash for college, but the number one obstacle that I faced, even throughout all of that, is every time I turned around, I had people of stature above me, parents and mentors and elders, whatever you want to say, constantly, what are you going to do when you graduate college? When are you going to get a real job? When are you going to actually go get a, you know, a career? And I'm just, I kept battling that as a 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 year old. And finally, somewhere around, I don't know, 22 years old or so. And now I'm in a very serious dating relationship. Now my girlfriend's parents, soon to be fiance, when are you going to get a real job? And I'm like, I tell you what, I'm going to get a real job the moment my fake job stops paying me real money that pays my real bills. That's when I'll get a real job.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I think that so many people, that is a huge obstacle because that is the cultural narrative. That's why so few people venture out to start businesses. They come up with a myriad of excuses. They're unwilling to face those demons that they know are going to arise from starting a business. And everybody's questioning their judgment. I just read this quote yesterday in some marketing email that was like, parents want safety for their children, not excellence. And I was like, boom, you know, that's so tragic.
Amen.
Why?
We can take some rabbit shells right there, Jody.
But the irony is that it's not as safe as we think that it was, or it has been in the past or whatever. Like the quote unquote safe route isn't necessarily safe anymore.
Yeah.
And so that's really fascinating. So how did you, so was it really just the fact that you were successful that allowed you to just kind of ignore those voices, or what was it that allowed you to do that?
You know what? I don't know that I would call it successful that was allowing me. It was that when I looked at the alternatives, I was like, why?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like once taking the action, like once you actually make the decision of in my podcast, I would say, damn it. Like I'm going to make the decision to do this. Decision made, period. End of story. Then once you've made the mental decision that I'm going to move forward in this thing, whatever this thing is, whether it's a business, a relationship, when the decision is made, I will fill in the blank. Then you give yourself mental permission to kind of block some of that noise and some of that pressure and some of that stress and anxiety out. And then when you just focus in the direction that you actually want to go, you start creating momentum on it. And eventually that will lead you to some success. So when you look back and you're like, but the alternative is for me to go get a real job? Like, I don't think so. Right? Like, I think sometimes, I mean, I just did a Facebook Live with my tribe a few weeks ago on, can I talk about this real quick on just like decision-making process? Because what you're really asking me is, how did you make the decision to stay in what you were doing and not go chase the other opportunity, right? Like, I happen to already be in the world of entrepreneurism. How did I just choose to stay in that world and not go get a real job, especially after I paid real money for a real degree that I don't even use? Well, so this is something that I've learned over many, 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 many years of having to make a lot of decisions and running now pretty big businesses with a lot of team members. And I call it worst case scenario decision-making, right? I just look at the decision that has to be made and I'm like, all right, I got to big decision I've got to make. It's got weight attached to it. It has emotions attached to it. It oftentimes has money attached to it. And I'll look at the decision that needs to be made. And all I do is go, okay, I make the decision to go into the world of entrepreneurism and start my side business. Like, let's pretend that was the decision. Okay, what is the worst case scenario? Worst case scenario. And then I list it out, right? And if I look at worst case scenario and I'm like, okay, if that's the worst that could happen, can I live with that? Yep, I could live with that. If that's worst case scenario, that the business fails miserably, I embarrass myself, I end up wasting a little bit of money, but I got to take my chance. Could I live with that worst case scenario? Yeah, I could live with that. Then do it. Shut up. Stop overanalyzing it. Do it. If you can't live with worst case scenario, then don't do it.
Right.
It made my decision-making process so much easier when I started looking at things and realizing that quite literally 99% of the massive decisions that some people spend years thinking about or analyze, it's why so many people have a million ideas a minute, but never act on them.
Yeah.
Because we come up with all the reasons that it won't work, we can't do it, or what if, or I'm scared, or all the other crap that enters into the 8 inches between our ears. Instead of just stopping all that noise and all that garbage and going, okay, if I decide to launch my thing, if I decide to get into this relationship, if I decide to get out of this relationship, whatever it is, what's the worst case scenario? And oftentimes I have found, in fact, so far in 20 some odd years of making decisions like this, I haven't found one yet that worst case scenario was me dying.
Right.
Or getting someone else killed. I'm like, well, if I ain't dead and I ain't going to kill anybody else doing it, let's do it. It's allowed me to take a lot of chances I wouldn't have taken otherwise.
Right. Right. Well, that's so fascinating. And, you know, I think that it's so important to business takes risk. Growth takes risk, and you're never going to actually grow or achieve that excellence status until you are willing to take that risk. You know, if you stay in safety, then you're not going to grow. You're not going to experience that. And so you had mentioned demons, that there were so many of these demons that you had to experience. And so in my experience, I have found that starting my entrepreneurial journey, studying these things out, facing my own weaknesses and my own, you know, those demons has actually compelled me to grow more than I've ever grown just sitting in the status quo, sitting in states in safety. And so, you know, tell me more about that. Like, how has being an entrepreneur, making those decisions, taking those risks, allowed you to grow and develop as a person?
Well, Jody, you just nailed it. Like, your explanation was spot on. I don't have much to add to that, because when you choose to make the decision that the number one thing I'm going to invest into, and like, this is a podcast all about families and building and relationships and how to, you know, bring in the idea of being the best, operating with excellence at home while still operating in excellence with your business. And here's what I believe is kind of the bottom line. Anybody that chooses to make the mental shift that the number one thing I can invest into, the number one thing I can invest into growing and learning is me. If I invest into me more and I invest into my mindset and my skill set, the net result is I become a better husband. I become a better father. I become a better business leader. I become a better boss to work for. I build better businesses that are more profitable. The more I invest into the 8 inches that sit on my head between my ears, the better I become at literally every single aspect of life. And if it wasn't for that, right? You said a moment ago that businesses is all about taking risk. And I believe that to be true. And most people look at me and they're like, I could never take the risks you've taken, or I would never take a gamble like you gamble. And I just laugh. And one day I'll go off on a tangent and I'll really talk at length about this. But I actually believe the opposite is true, that the longer you are an entrepreneur and the more you mature as an entrepreneur, actually, the less gambling you do. Now, to the outside world, it looks like gambles. It looks like risks. It looks like, oh my God, you mortgaged your whole entire world. And that's young entrepreneurs that make a lot of mistakes. They do that. Mm-hmm. But once you've gotten past a lot of the ego-driven growth and you've gotten to actual organic growth, you start to realize that, I mean, I make big decisions today that I was not mentally or physically or spiritually or emotionally equipped to make 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's been the 20 years of journey of learning how to become an entrepreneur that today I'm able to make decisions that 10 years ago would have scared me to death. Like, scared me straight into a coma, that today I can make in a matter of days, hours, weeks, heavy duty, big financial decisions. And yet we're able to make it by that principle of, hey, what's worst case scenario? And then number two is I've learned how to calculate kind of the risk reward structure. And I'm like, all right, there's the risk. Risk is that worst case scenario. But the other side of the equation is, what's the reward? And when I look at the risk reward and I'm like, all right, reward balances out risk like 7 to 1, go.
Yeah.
It actually, I know it looks crazy to people that aren't in the world of entrepreneurism, but Jody, for people like you and people like me and people like listen to your podcast, these people already have made some gambles and they're making some risks, what appears to the outside world. My challenge to all of them would simply be, know where it is that you're wanting to go, stay true to that path, and invest into yourself. And I have never lost money investing into myself.
That's awesome. You know, I was just talking to my dad, that I live with my parents right now. Anyways, and we were talking about how when we're asked to do hard things that at the beginning, so just example, I liked reading like business books and self-help things and stuff. And when I would start out, I would have this huge gap of like cognitive dissonance between my reality and the things that were just being asked to do in those books that I was like, this is impossible. There's no way I can do this. But now I've read so many of these books now that when I read that, I'm like, oh, I could totally implement this because it's not such a huge gap between the idea and what my reality is. It's just getting closer and closer and closer to that becoming like part of who I am. And so that's definitely been a part of my entrepreneurial journey, like that, what you're saying, that, yeah, we have these demons, but it's not, and it's not that the demons become easier. It's that we get stronger, we get more knowledgeable, we get smarter, you know, we develop those skills that becomes easier. And so, yeah, like you said, people are observing going, you're crazy. And you're like, what are you talking about? This is so easy. Like, I mean, respectively, you know what I mean? But it's like, that's exactly it. You have to grow into that attitude, and starting this journey helps you to get there, to get on that path of growth.
I mean, Jody, you said it all in one word. It's that journey, right? Like too many people on the outside or maybe a very young in the business entrepreneur, somebody just kind of starting their entrepreneur journey. I think, is it Tony Robbins that says, don't ever compare the beginning of your journey to the end of someone else's?
Right.
Right. That is a mistake. I don't make it as often anymore. I've kind of learned that lesson, but my gosh, did I used to look at other people. And sometimes even people that had been in the business fewer number of years than I had. And I'm like, how are they accomplishing so much? What's wrong with me? It's all like, what am I screwing up? What am I not doing right? And what I failed to realize for a long time is that I was comparing the beginning of my journey to the middle or the end of someone else's journey. And actually, if you'll just stop letting those demons scream and run around inside of your head, telling you you're not destined for greatness, you cannot do this, nobody wants to listen to you, and all the other mental garbage that we as entrepreneurs fight. Like we fight those battles inside of our own head already. And then our friends and family kind of, not with malicious intent, actually, right, our friends and family often do it from a place of love, but they come to us and they're like, you gotta like go get a real job. You gotta stop doing this. You gotta stop. Sometimes you're just gonna have to block that stuff out, stay laser focused on your journey. And then as you take, you know, at least for me, as I took baby steps towards my journey, all right, I was like, oh man, I learned that little thing. And now once you've learned that thing and you've mastered that thing and you've become kind of master over the thing no longer scares you. And now your capacity, John Maxwell calls it the law of the lid. As you move your law of the lid up, you're able to contain and handle more.
That's awesome. And I love that the obstacle is the way type of mentality too, that it's like, if you come up with against a challenge, then you tackle that thing, you become stronger, you grow in that capacity.
Absolutely.
The thing that you're challenged with.
For sure.
That's so
the
awesome.
The challenge is the way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a mindset and a mentality that is not necessarily a part of our general culture. You know, there's definitely if you've ever read into like fixed versus a growth mindset attitude, you know, it takes a growth mindset. It takes this attitude that I can grow through these obstacles rather than, and it's okay if I look dumb in the process or whatever, you know, things like that. Whereas the fixed mindset is, I don't want to look stupid, so I'm not going to even try type of an attitude. And so it's tragic that's what's so common.
Well, Jody, it's happened probably for all of humanity before us and all of humanity with us and all of humanity after us. We have a flaw in our DNA that we believe we are the only ones facing the circumstance we're facing, be it a business decision, a relationship, a vice, addiction. Like people battle these demons within themselves because they believe that they're the only ones facing the problem they're facing. When in fact, I did a talk recently. I don't remember where I was speaking on this at, but I did a talk on the promised land always follows the pain. The promised land always follows the pain. And if you, even if you, like, whether you're a Christian or not, or whether you read the Bible or not, like there's some really good stuff in there. And there's a story that Moses took the Israelites out of captivity. And for 40 years, he led a million people all over the freaking desert, lost, going through pain and struggle and drought and disease and famine and without water, like hell for 40 years. 40. And it's all because they couldn't stay focused on the promised land they had been given. They kept trying to do things their way. They kept trying to figure out, well, I'm going to try it this way because like the promised land is sitting here. And finally, once they gave up trying to realize we're all headed on the same journey. What if we just worked together? What if we followed the path? What if we went the way that's been blazed before us? Boom, promised land. Promised land shows up. Now they're living in the land of milk and honey. I believe for us as entrepreneurs, for us as parents, for us as husbands and wives and spouses and mothers and daughters, like there is a promised land. There is a way to have an incredible business that is profitable, that makes the impact you want it to make, and be an amazing mother and father, and be an incredible lover. And like you can have it all, but not if you don't understand that you're going to have to go through the pain to get to the promised land. The pain is what makes us stronger. The pain is what teaches us the lessons. The pain is what forms us to become that which we are. And you either get to become the victor who lives in the promised land, or you get to become the victim that lives inside of your own jail cell.
I have nothing else to add to that. That's awesome. Thank you, Zach. That was so cool. Thank you. It's worth it. That's how I would conclude that. Like, it's worth it. Just stick to it.
It is. Yeah.
Thank you. Awesome. Well, that concludes the second portion of the interview of understanding how you grew your business and why it was so important to you and the obstacles, that the obstacle is the way. Thank you. So the third portion of the interview, I just want to ask you a simple question about while you're growing your business as an entrepreneur, what are the systems and strategies that you have implemented that has allowed you to prioritize your family?
Sorry, hang on one second. Okay. I got to answer this guy. I've got another call right after this, but he's an hour
early.
We're
out of time.
He shouldn't
be
here yet.
He's in a different time zone or something, eh?
It's happened to me twice today that I sent him the calendar invite. They accepted it. They set up the meeting and then they're showing up at the wrong time.
What does it say on the calendar as the time zone? Because that happened to me the other day. And it was like it didn't say that it was Mountain Standard Time. It said it was like GMT negative 6 o'clock or something. And I had to look at like, wait, what does that mean? You know, I was like, what does that mean? And then I was like, oh, that's Mountain Standard Time. So it was like, oh, I had to look that up. So I wonder what the calendar says when they schedule it.
I'm not sure. All right, I'm good. Let's go ahead. Number three.
Okay. So the third portion of this interview is I would just want to ask you, what are the systems or strategies that you have had in place or the practices or routines, habits, things that you've had in place that has allowed you to prioritize your family as you are owning your business?
I love it. Love this question. I think this boils down for my wife and I. We were so blessed in that we've both been in the business world. We met through a business relationship. We've ran teams, we've done coaching, training. And what I've learned really is that the longer I've been in business and the more people I've been managing and leading on my business side, it equipped me to be I hope I'm building a really good family structure and I'm a good dad and I'm involved with my kids and I'm a good husband to my wife and I respect her and I love her and all those things because I don't believe there is a separation really at all between business and family. For those of us that are entrepreneurs, our business, at least for me, my business was my baby long before I ever had babies, right? Mm-hmm. And so I had to treat that baby like a baby. I had to love it. I had to feed it. I had to spend time with it. I had to nurture it. I had to read to it. I had to invest time and money into it. And then that also meant all of the people that I have hired and trained and are part of my business team. It's absolutely been no different whatsoever with our actual children. Except for I obviously spend more time with them. Mm-hmm. But it really, for us having a structure, we just kind of brought a lot of our business processes and systems we had learned over to the family business and structure system, and it's worked out pretty well. So I'll give you a couple of concrete examples. Number one, one of our we have what we call tribal values at our team, at our business. These are three tribal values that everybody that works inside of my operation, everybody that's in my hierarchy, everybody that in any way, shape, or form reports to me in any way, shape, or form, they have to literally agree to. They become a believer in our three tribal values. Well, we have family values that look very similar, sound very similar. And as our children get a little bit older, those values will become part of their value structure. Right now, it's just the values my wife and I operate from because our kids are only three, so they don't really understand this yet. But an example of a family value that we have is we value mealtime. We value mealtime. We eat dinner together as a family almost 7 nights a week. It is rare. It is pretty rare that we do not eat mealtime together. And when I say mealtime together, very different how I grew up. We eat mealtime at the dinner table without the TV turned on. And I have a rule that I have had since I started dating my wife 7 years ago. We call the dinner table the electronics free zone. That includes when we go out to restaurants. Our kids at 3 years old, still to this day, 3 years in, do not have iPads. They don't play. Well, they do, but they don't play with them at dinner time. They're not allowed at the dinner table. They're not allowed to go to the restaurant. We go to nice restaurants, and our kids actually, like, we're terrible parents. We make them sit there, and we make them be part of the conversation, and we make them laugh and color and tell us about their day. And they've been doing that since they could hold their heads up. Mm-hmm. And that's just one of those values that very countercultural today. Like, I go to restaurants and we go out to eat and we'll watch 90% of the restaurant not even interacting with each other at all. Mom and dad are on their phones. The kids are on their phones or iPad. Like, it hurts my heart for them because they're missing out on what I believe to be mealtime is like sacred. And so that's one of our family values, that at the dinner table, it is family time. Right at the restaurant table. I do this with our friends. I'm going to give your audience some really terrible ideas here, but we'll do this with our friends. We'll go out with a big group of friends, and kids are there, kids aren't there. It doesn't matter. But oftentimes when we're just going out with a bunch of friends, we'll go out to dinner, nice place. You know what everybody does. They grab their phone. They're on their phone. And so I have a rule now that when you go out with Harlow, you know, I usually tell people at the table, I'm like, hey, everybody, put your phones down. First person that we catch, anybody at the table, we catch you on the phone, you're picking up tonight's entire check.
Whoa, that's awesome.
And it's funny how often people will not touch their phones. And all of a sudden, conversations start to happen and like relationships are rekindled. I've had more people come up to me after dinner and they give me like a hug and they're like, I absolutely love the no phone rule. I'm going to do that with my family. I'm going to do that with our friends. Like, it just... you've got to develop whatever is important to you, whatever is important to your family. That's just one of them. Another one that's big for us is me and my wife. We have sacred time together that is just ours. It's not for the team. It's not for the kids. We work very hard. I can't say that we're perfect at it, but we do a pretty good job of making sure that we go on regular date nights. You know, when we're on our A game, it's been really tough having toddler twins to go out every single week on a date night. But in our perfect euphoric world, if we could have it exactly how we wanted it, we'd go on a date night every week. The truth of the matter is we're much more consistent at making it happen once a month. Mm-hmm. But we got to have time that she and I can just get the babysitter, drop the kids off for a few hours, and us go be us.
Yeah.
And share a glass of wine and share a few laughs, and we don't touch our phones. And it is what has allowed us to keep our... it's how we run a pretty big size business and, you know, deal with building a home and having 3-year-old toddler twins and big transitions happening in our life right now and being married now for 7 years. So we're supposed to be having like this 7-year itch that hasn't showed up yet. Like, it's allowed us to live a very solid, and we still have problems and we still fight. Please don't take that the wrong way. But overall, things are pretty stinking healthy, but it's because of the decisions that we make on the lifestyle we choose to live instead of trying to we just make decisions on what's important to us and then we follow through on those decisions.
Yeah, I think that a lot of us fall into this cycle of just reacting, you know, like, oh, we haven't had a date for a while. I guess we should do that or something, you know, instead of saying before there's any problems, let's implement that we will promise to have date night regularly, you know, or things like that. You're right. It takes forethought to plan these things out rather than just reacting, going, wow, we've had a lot of fights lately, or, you know, we haven't had any time for intimacy, or we haven't done whatever, you know. It's like, oh, well, maybe I guess we should plan something, you know, and or your family, your marriage is already falling apart and you're going, I guess we should go get therapy or help or something. It's no, you got to have the forethought and the plan in place before those things arise.
Jody, you're so right. And I want you and your audience, like everybody, I'm not trying to put on any type of a front here. I only know these things and I live these things because I screwed these things up. I mean, I was married when I was 19 or 20 years old. I have a divorce by the time I was 24 or 25, trying to build a business. I built a business during that time, but lost my family. We didn't have kids or anything, but you know, I failed that marriage because I screwed this stuff up. If it can be screwed up or done wrong, I've probably done it, which is why, you know, 20 years later now on my second marriage and we do have kids together and we do have a rock solid relationship, but it really is only because of experience of screwing stuff up and going, you know, that sucked. Maybe I shouldn't do that again.
Yeah. Right. Well, I'm glad that you could be on here to share your experience so that people who don't have as much experience, we can say, hey, here's what you can do to avoid the problems. Learn from my experience rather than having to go through it that yourself. It shouldn't, you know, we want families to survive. We want families to rock this whole family business thing and all of that. And so that's what I'm here for. So it's a fun ring.
Sorry. Okay. I had that on silent.
That's all good. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Zach. This has been awesome. And I just really love your insights and your energy and that you are making it happen. I really appreciate, you know, your willingness to come on the show and talk about this stuff. So thank you.
Jody, thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure to get to hang out with you guys. And I wish you guys all the best as you continue to build your businesses and love on your families.
Thank you again for tuning in to another amazing episode of Our Modern Heritage, the Home and Family Culture podcast with me, Jody Chafee. I'm so excited to have you here. And I wanted to let you know that there's even more amazing content inside of my Facebook group. It's called The Family Culture Hackers. Inside the group, I broadcast these episodes on Fridays before I publish them out as podcast episodes. So if you want a first look at each of these interviews, make sure you come and join the group. I'm also hosting events and masterclasses and coaching calls inside of the group. So make sure you come and request to join. Just come into Facebook and search Family Culture Hackers and you will be accepted into the group and we'll have a great time. Thank you so much for being here and for listening. And remember that if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.